Welcome. No matter what appears, it is not problematic in any way. Whether it's a thought, emotion, or an experience, it poses no obstacle. It poses no threat. It's only when we believe that appearances pose an obstacle or a threat that we don't have well-being. So this is very simple, isn't it? And the simple instruction I gave at the beginning of the meeting today to relax body and mind completely is all that is required to no longer regard appearances as obstacles, as threats. Now, another thing we could call appearances are thoughts, emotions, and experiences. Another word we could use to describe appearances are phenomena. Another word we could use to describe appearances are points of view. Points of view included and contained within the basic space of mind. So if we want to know about the mind and we want to know how the mind functions, then we have to know what the basis of the mind is. Now, many of us learn that what the mind is thoughts and emotions. The mind is thoughts and emotions that are responses to whatever occurs. So that's what we learn that the mind is. However, we could look at the thoughts and emotions as software. The software of the mind. It's just the software. It's the program. And we could look at the mind itself as the hardware. So, you know, software is needed for hardware to work. But there's another thing that's needed for both the software and the hardware to work in a computer, for example, and that's an operating system. If there's no operating system, then the hardware doesn't work and neither does the software. There's no interface between the two. So for the mind, this operating system is awareness. That's the operating system of the mind. It's within awareness that all the points of view appear and resolve, no matter what they are. And the appearance and the resolution of the points of view as well is awareness. It's due to awareness, so it isn't something other than awareness. And unless we know these two aspects about what appears within the mind, we don't know anything about the mind. Unless we know that the appearances have the two aspects of being awareness as well as whatever their description is, we don't really understand the nature of the mind, and we don't understand our thoughts and emotions or really our life in other than a very basic, ordinary, conventional way. Now, when we want to get to know the nature of the mind, all we need to know is that we need to get acquainted with awareness. That's it. We need to get acquainted with that which makes everything about the mind operate. And in order to do so, all we need to do is just rest repeatedly in awareness, as awareness, for short moments, repeated many times, until it becomes automatic. If there is a commitment to just that, it is guaranteed that familiarity with awareness will be gained. So engage the fearless conduct of not holding to any appearance as being something that is an obstacle, a threat, something that we need to do something about. Just rest, that's it. No matter what you're doing, walking around, running around, working, studying, making love, meditating, whatever it is you're doing, just rest completely. Relax body and mind without a need to describe what's going on or to seek anything in an appearance. And what do I mean about seek anything in appearance? Well, what I mean by that is that to seek something in an appearance is to have a thought, for example, a thought of happiness. Oh, I'm so happy. And then to seek something in that thought of happiness is to say, I'm going to hold on to this thought of happiness because that's where happiness is. It's in this thought and feeling of happiness. So I'm going to hold on to this state of happiness no matter what happens, and that's how I'm going to be happy. However, I'm sure we've all tried to do that to one degree or another at some point. And did it ever work? No, it didn't. Even if we can, with great rigor, get into a state of happiness, at some point something unexpected will happen and our state of happiness will be gone. Now, when we rest repeatedly in awareness, as awareness for short moments repeated many times, the importance and significance of the thoughts and emotions lessens, and then it resolves completely. And what is left when we're no longer relying on thoughts and emotions to describe a world and ourselves? What comes about is wisdom, complete wisdom that is beyond words and concepts, absolute wisdom that is the source of energy and love, absolute wisdom that is laser-like in its ability to see through everything that is occurring and to respond with an appropriate solution. Sounds good, doesn't it? So no matter what appears, it is not an obstacle of any kind. And this resting in awareness for short moments, many times until it becomes automatic and there's no need to rest, we could call that obedience to the unenforceable. Now, for many of us, what we've been practicing is obedience to the enforceable. So we obey our thoughts and emotions, whatever it is we've taken ourselves to be, whatever we've learned about ourselves, we have obedience to that. So as an example of that, I was born and I learned through repetition that my name is Candace and that I'm a girl. So I began practicing obedience to that, obedience to my name Candace and obedience to the fact that I'm a girl. And then other things were added in over time, other characteristics and qualities were used to describe me. So those became belief systems too. I was born into a Catholic family, so then I started practicing obedience to this idea that I'm a Catholic. And, you know, I certainly didn't go along with everything about that, but basically I believed in God and I was taught to have a fear of God. So all of these points of view, I began to practice obedience to, oh, there's God and God is to be feared. Even though in my heart I knew whatever that was love, I'd been introduced to this other idea, this other belief system, that whatever is absolute is to be feared, and that whatever is absolute is there somewhere keeping a scorecard. And on that scorecard, one side has all my good attributes and the other my bad attributes. And of course, the bad side was much longer because I could never catch up. No matter how much doing I did, you know, I just could never get rid of that bad side. It was always there. It was seemingly nothing could be done about it, no matter what was tried. And so, you know, I learned these other belief systems too, that obedience to things like prayer, obedience to taking myself to be within a certain race, a Caucasian, and isn't that what I am? And you know, that meant certain things. And I was born in America, so I took myself to be an American, and then that meant certain things. So each of these belief systems, they kind of had bleeders that went out from it, like spawning code somewhere inside me, all this programming about what I took myself to be. So, you know, by the time I got to be an adult, and then, of course, many other things were added in, that I had this type of intelligence, so I practiced obedience to that, and I had this kind of emotional makeup. I was always very emotional, so that was one of my belief systems, too. That's what I am. I'm emotional. And all of these things I practiced obedience to, and I did that with great fervor until I was in my late 20s. And when I got to my late 20s, I looked around me and I just didn't know where to go from there. I practiced obedience to all these belief systems, and as a teenager and adult, I'd added in many more, not only religion, but spirituality, philosophy, psychology, and I was dizzied with all this stuff. I didn't know what to make out of it. And I got into a situation in my life where things started to go in a way I hadn't expected, and I didn't know what to do. All of the different strategies, all of the obedience I'd paid to these different belief systems, it didn't help me at all. It didn't help me. There was nothing that would help. I could find nothing in all these points of view that could support me or sustain me. I'd look to one and it wouldn't help. I'd look to another and it wouldn't help. And I'd even added in a few more antidotes to kind of take the edge off when I needed to. Maybe I what some of them are. I'd have a drink, or maybe I'd smoke some dope or whatever it was. But I got to a point where none of that worked. You know, no matter what it was that I had sought relief in, that I'd been seeking in all these points of view, all these belief systems, to find some kind of happiness and satisfaction. But I never found them in those things. And so when I realized that they were not to be found in any of these appearances, then I crashed. I felt hopeless. I felt desperate. I'd look into the future of my life and I'd think, well, you know, if this is the way it is now, it doesn't look too good for the years ahead. This seems very bleak. I wasn't laughing at the time, of course. And so I got into a state of total hopelessness. And in that complete hopelessness and despair, I suddenly realized that all of these appearances, no matter what they were and are, have the same underlying basis. And I didn't really have anything to say about that basis, like a word to describe it. I just knew that when I rested as that for short moments repeated many times, I felt a relief in that resting. So one of these inflammatory points of view belief systems would appear, and I would just rest as the basis of that. So I'm not splitting off from it and with no one doing anything, just that, where complete relief and well-being and whatever is appearing are inseparable. And I just completely kept repeating that over and over. And as I did so, it became more and more automatic until it was permanently automatic at all times, with no division between what appears and the basis of everything. So, you know, what we're talking about is very straightforward. Now, you know, at that time I had many belief systems, and a lot of them were very strong. They had an extremely strong emotional tone, even though there were things that I really didn't totally believe, like the belief system I've been introduced to a fear of the absolute, a fear of God. Still, that was kind of a thread that ran through everything, no matter what it is, because the more I rested, the more I realized that so many social codes, so many of the beliefs I'd had about myself and the laws that govern me had this thread running through them, that I was to fear whatever is absolute, that was somehow separate from me and in some way it could get me if I didn't toe the line. So, you know, that brings up a lot of strong feelings, and I experienced all those feelings, and as I did, I just rested because I was going against everything I'd learned about life. I'd had it. I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. I was fed up. I did not want to live that way anymore. And I knew it. And I was willing to go to any lengths to not live that way. I'd given up on the conventional way of doing things completely. And as I rested more and more, this incredible reality unfolded of warm kind-heartedness for myself and everyone else, and wisdom that was completely beyond words, wisdom that was beyond all these beliefs and descriptions that I had taken to be so important. The Great Freedom Teaching teaches only this: to rest repeatedly for short moments, repeated many times until it becomes automatic, and not to consider any point of view, any belief system that you might have to be either true or false or an obstacle to that total and complete natural freshness that is at the basis of everything. And no matter what comes up, no matter how strong the emotional tone of fear or whatever it might be in relation to all these belief systems, we've all learned to just rest repeatedly. And as we do so, each of us moves into the space of wisdom beyond words and concepts. And not only do we do it individually, but many others around the world do the same thing. And in this way, among humankind, we develop a very strong wisdom body. It's like the wisdom army of awareness. And the wisdom army has very, very powerful weapons. It has unparalleled weapons. First of all, wisdom awareness has complete control over all phenomena. It no longer relies on the phenomenal input of what's going on to make decisions, whether it's the thoughts and emotions in the mind or the experiences that seem to be outside. It's not clinging to belief systems in order to describe a world and its events. Rather, it's that which encompasses a world and its events, and that is the source of true wisdom. Now, another weapon of the wisdom army is superb helpfulness. Superb helpfulness and super completeness that sees everyone and everything is included. So this isn't the kind of thing where you say, oh, I'm resting as awareness and you're not, so forget about you. In resting as awareness, there's complete inclusion and kind-heartedness for everyone. In realizing how much our belief systems have controlled us, when we start to relax all of that into the equalness that is the basis of everything, then we realize what it is that has plagued everyone. You know, we realize that all these problems created by ourselves and by humankind altogether, they're all rooted in this fundamental problem of the old mind that clings to appearances and takes them to be real, and the new mind, which does not do so and abides as the spaciousness of wisdom. So, you know, we need this for ourselves, each of us. We definitely need it for ourselves. It's what we all want. We all want, you know, and no matter what perception appears, there's complete freedom in the immediacy of that perception. Complete freedom in the immediacy of that perception. It poses absolutely no obstacle or threat. It's inseparable from pristine awareness, just like the color blue is inseparable from the sky. There's no way to divide them out from each other. In the cloudless sky, it's totally pristine. There's nothing going on. Forever stainless wisdom awareness has never had anything going on. And when we rest as that, we realize the equalness of everything, the absolute equalness of everything. No matter what comes up for you, simply rest as awareness. Rest as awareness. And you will find conclusively through your own experience that whatever appears poses no threat. And in that is found complete wisdom, the wisdom that is all-knowing. Now, you know, I kind of had a dream about this last night that symbolized everything being no threat. It was really a great dream. We were having these meetings, satsangs everywhere, and so we decided that instead of talking, we were going to dance. That's what we were going to do in satsang. We were going to dance, and Adrian was my dance partner. So, laugh for us, Adrian. Will someone tickle Adrian? Well, Adrian has this infectious laugh where he just bursts out in gleeful laughter, and then he pounces on someone and starts hugging them uncontrollably and saying, "I love you." So if you haven't met Adrian before, I've just described Adrian. So Adrian's my dance partner in the dream, and we're getting our costumes all together and that sort of thing. We're getting ready to do this dance. But one of the things we have to do before we give our dance performance, we're going to go out on San Francisco Bay in this little craft. It's kind of a cross between a tugboat and a ferry. And Adrian is at the helm, so he's driving the boat. And we're all dressed up in our dance costumes, which are white. You know, we're ready to go and do this performance. And one of the things we do in our performance, because there's a song that goes along with it, and it's all about the total loving spaciousness that is the reality of everything. In this song, whenever the word divorce is mentioned in the song, we kiss passionately. So you see, this symbolizes what we try to do with the appearances. We try to divorce them. But when we rest as awareness, we kiss them passionately. So we no longer try to separate out from the appearances. Anyway, so we get in our boat and we're out on San Francisco Bay, and there is a blizzard. Well, there's never been a blizzard on San Francisco Bay. The climate is very temperate, but we're out on San Francisco Bay. There's a blizzard. You can't see anything. And Adrian is laughing uncontrollably. "I love you, I love you." And he's at the helm of the boat, and it's full throttle, so it's going as fast as it can go. We're in this blizzard. We're just happy as can be. You know those gates at the races, like race horses, where the horses all come out of gates? Well, all of a sudden, we're happy, gleeful, no obstacles, plowing through the snowstorm. We see the Golden Gate Bridge up ahead, and all of a sudden we start to see gates like this everywhere. And Adrian is laughing like a maniac, and you know, these gates are open, so we're zooming right through all the gates. But all of a sudden we get to some gates, and as soon as we get there, they start to close, but we make it through anyway. Then we get to some other gates where they're already closed. As soon as, snap, you know, the gate shuts, and we're headed right for it. But we always find a way. You know, we go to the left, or we go to the right, or we fly over the top. No matter what happens, no matter what the obstacle is, we rest with all appearances and surpass it by not seeing anything as an obstacle. We pull out all the stops. There are stop signs whenever these gates come across that says stop, but there's no stopping us. Whatever happens, we're full throttle. No matter what it is, it is no obstacle. It poses no threat. So within ourselves, when we rest as awareness, we have to rest with that kind of enthusiasm. That's very descriptive, isn't it? No matter what happens, there's complete freedom. Nothing whatsoever is an obstacle. And we don't even have to think about things like the doer, the experiencer who's resting, that kind of thing. If we have questions like that, or questions about a doer or a personal identity, resting as awareness will quickly realize that that personal identity is something that's been introduced. It's just a belief system that we've been holding to in a certain way. We don't have to do anything about it. We're not trying to either get rid of it or hold on to it. There are no extremes in pure space. There are no extremes anywhere. You can't say one point, one part of pure space is good and another part bad. Everything is equal, no matter what it is. And all of these appearances, no matter what they are, they're comprised of space and nothing else. They've never been anything other than the original purity of pure space. Today, we can even show this to ourselves with scientific instruments like the linear accelerator or powerful microscopes. When we look at even the smallest particles, what's beyond that is space. So everything comes from space and returns to space. And the coming from and the returning to are space too. So what can we say about that? When we think about our mind or awareness, what does that say about that? Well, it says that the mind and awareness, that's space too, and it's not trapped in here. We're not, we have no boundaries, essentially, that are defined by our skin line. If we want to look at what we really are, look to space. Look to the vast expanse of space. And when we look to space and that everything is comprised of space, we see that everything that appears within space has a natural order. It has a natural order that we can't deny. It's completely natural in that whether it's a horrible event or a wonderful event, it comes from space and resolves in space, and during its duration, it's space too. So what can we say about that? You know, we can't really find any words to describe that. There's no use trying to describe it. Why bother? It's wisdom. It's complete wisdom that is the natural order of everything, where in order to live a life in a happy and productive way that's entirely beneficial to oneself and to others requires only resting as everything, no matter what it is. We don't have to do anything about what we believe. Whatever it is, it is. When we rest as awareness that is the basis of all the beliefs, then we quickly come to our own conclusions about these beliefs we have. What we see is we've never been limited by anything. We've learned we're limited, just like I learned that I'm Candace, I'm a girl. Then, you know, soon I learned I was born. I was born on June 14th, and I'll die sometime. And in between that birth and death, I'd have a life. And so what I learned was a belief system. I learned that I was dependent on that. I was dependent on this birth and life and death as my sense of being, that my sense of being was completely confined by that. And I learned, you know, that if I was good, I'd go to heaven when I died, and that if I was bad, I'd go to hell. And I could never really get into that belief system too much, but I just couldn't believe that there was a hell. It just didn't seem like that was actually a place anyone could go. So you see these belief systems that are so powerful that I took myself to be, it was only in the rest of wisdom awareness that I was able to resolve them, that I was able to let go of the emotional tone, this really strong emotional tone of complete vulnerability that they imply for all of us. When we have strong belief systems, then we develop belief systems about everything and believe somehow that we're dependent on those. Like we believe that we're dependent on the body to be, or we believe that we're dependent on the breath to be, or we're dependent on the heartbeat to be, or we're even dependent on the elements, earth, air, fire, water, that we're dependent on those in order to be. But when we just rest as awareness, when in the direct encounter with all of these appearances, we realize more and more that awareness simply is. It doesn't depend on any appearance to be. No matter how entrenched or fixed those belief systems may be. And some of these, you know, that we depend on our body or depend on the earth to be, those are very strong. They have a very strong tone within us. And if anything about that seems threatening to us, we begin to feel very vulnerable and afraid. So we become afraid of a lot of things, no matter what they are. We become afraid of our own bodies and its thoughts and emotions. And we become afraid of sensations we have in our bodies. And we become afraid of things going on outside, like in the natural elements, the earthquakes and things that happen in the air, like tornadoes, monsoons, hurricanes. We become afraid of fire, and we become afraid of things like flood and tsunami. And these things carry a very strong emotional tone. They're a very strong belief system. We feel very vulnerable in the face of them. Why? Because we have the belief system that we end if they get us. If there's an earthquake and we die, that's it for us. That's the end of being. Or if we get drowned in a flood, that's the end of being. So we develop very, very deep-rooted fears within ourselves in relation to these things. So you see, when we begin to rest as awareness, a lot of these points of view that have been subtle belief systems start to appear. But the only way to resolve them and to resolve their grip and come to know that we're not really dependent on anything, awareness is not dependent on anything, is to continue to rest as awareness when all these points of view appear. And then we drive our craft effortlessly through all the obstacles in the blizzard of points of view and belief systems. You can do with whatever you want to do. No, we were just laughing hysterically. Well, and you know, it's kind of like that, to tell you the truth, and resting is awareness, because some of these things come up and it really seems like the gates are closed. There's no getting past this one, whatever it is. But just keep resting as awareness, no matter how stirred up you might get. The stirring and you too are just appearances that are primordially pure awareness. Now, you know, what does this result in? Well, what it results in is laughter, complete ease of being, the ability to live life in a relaxed way, in a truly enjoyable way that is of benefit to ourselves and others. So, yeah, why not? Now, you know, sometimes when people hear the talks, some people are ready to let go of belief systems. They've had enough, like I had at one point when I was young, and I just didn't want it anymore. I was willing to go through the vulnerability and the panic I felt at just resting as some of these things appeared, and it was good. You know, it was good that I did that, because even as scary as some of these things might have seemed to encounter them, what resulted from it was so beautiful. And it's instantaneously affirming. When we rest as awareness, no matter how entrenched these beliefs have been and how much we might be holding to them to describe ourselves, when we rest as awareness, that feels a lot better than the belief. That's what it boils down to. It's just so reaffirming. It's like a perfect biofeedback loop where, you know, the rest itself is the absolute heart essence of everything. So when we rest as that, no matter how vulnerable we may feel, we're able to just enjoy that rather than plummet into a state of vulnerability or fear. So this is a good thing. We really need this for ourselves, and we definitely need it for our floundering species. Wouldn't you agree? We do. We've taken the whole paradigm or worldview of good and bad, these extreme opposites, to its limit. And so now we need to shift. We need to shift, and we need to get familiar with the true capacity of our mind, wisdom, awareness, and allow that to rule or reign throughout humankind. And in that way, we can take care of ourselves and our planet, the planet that we live on. And if we travel other places in space, we can have proper and appropriate relationships with other beings who might be there, beneficial relationships. Now, if we continue on with the old mind rather than evolving into the new mind, well, we can kind of see where we're going. You know, things are getting increasingly polarized within ourselves and among the peoples of the world. So, you know, it's good that we're here because we represent many continents, the people who are here in this room. And the Great Freedom Teaching is a worldwide teaching that people on all continents are resting as awareness and in all kinds of circumstances, not just in rooms like this, but in prison and schools and many other places. So, you see, the new mind is a grassroots movement. It's not dependent on anything. It's not dependent on authorities or governments or anything else. It's an imperative of humankind. It's beyond belief systems and anything that they imply or supply. So, you know, in this way we can truly come to understand ourselves and be of tremendous benefit. Are there any questions? Do you have a question?
My question is, so we're all one and we're all awareness, which is the same, and it's kind of the common body or what you can call it. So why is awareness moving through all these different bodies? Like, why are we in what it?
Who knows? In the natural rest of awareness, all is understood but cannot be described. It's the need to describe everything and make sense of it that by which belief systems come about. But right now, who knows what anything is? So just rest as awareness, and in that wisdom that comes into full light, with resting in awareness, all is known, but without any need to develop philosophical tomes to describe it. Its spontaneity is much more immediate and much more direct in its beneficial nature in all activity. Now, you see, when we start to ask who, what, where, when, why, and how, then we're a journalist. We're trying to describe everything and have it make sense to everybody else from those questions. And all of the belief systems we have that are based on opposites come about through asking those kinds of questions and then describing everything. So, you know, once we say, well, awareness seems to be divided, why is this so? And then we've got to have an answer to that. Do you see what I mean? If we have the question, then we have the compulsion to have the answer. We're impelled to move forward to find the answer. And then, you know, the answer comes about in many ways. One group of people will say, well, it's divided up like that because Adam and Eve ate the apple. And somehow human beings fell out of pure space or the Garden of Eden, or but you see, there's never been anything that could fall anywhere in pure space. In pure space, everything is pure space, so there's no one or nothing to fall or hold to anything or get stuck anywhere. So you see, if we start to ask why, then that kind of belief system may develop, or another one that implies reincarnation or karma. You see, once we ask those questions and we need desperately to describe what's going on other than to leave it as it is, opposite of all extremes, you know, with no need to take up a position anywhere at any moment throughout life, to just live freely and immediately is the complete freedom that is every appearance. There aren't any belief systems there, but yet there is wisdom. You know, there is complete wisdom, complete free-flowing wisdom that can respond beneficially no matter what's occurring.
Celibacy not a prerequisite for this life?
Well, if that's what you want to do, it's fine with me. But nothing is necessary. You know, nothing needs to be done in order to be who we are. We already are who we are. If we say that something needs to be done to be who we are, do you see what I mean? Then we step aside from who we are by saying that there's something that needs to be done. But at the same time, nothing is excluded. So if one person feels naturally moved to celibacy, but not for any reason, do you see what I'm saying? Hmm. If celibacy is taken to be like the golden key to the destination of who we are, then that would be a detour away from who we are. If we just choose celibacy because that's the way we want to live, well, that's another matter. Mm-hmm. Does that answer your question?
If we are not practicing celibacy, that means we are looking for pleasure outside ourselves. That means we are all not one, as the awareness implies.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a seemingly contradiction that I think you understand, right? Okay.
Uh-huh, I've been around a long time, and I have children and grandchildren, so, well, you know, one of the things is we develop belief systems about our sexual nature, so we all develop belief systems about that, and most of us develop very ambivalent belief systems about our sexual nature. So what that means is we love it, and at the same time we might have all these ideas about it. So, you know, we may have learned that only certain kinds of sexual lifestyles are appropriate, like monogamy. Or we may have learned that we get married to one person and then stay with them forever, and then sex is okay. Or that we have to be married in order to have a sexual relationship with someone. So you see, the more these belief systems we learn, the more ambivalent we feel about our sexual nature. And another thing that almost all of us learn is that when that sexual nature awakens in us, you know, maybe we're a little kid, a tiny baby, and we like to play with our genitals, or, and people say, no, don't do that, stop to, or pull the hand away, or whatever it is. And then when we get to be a teenager, we're in puberty, and those sexual feelings just come totally alive, then we're told that those are sexual feelings. And that they're usually, we're told, they're to be avoided. So you have these powerful erotic movements within your body, and most of us are told to avoid them. So, you know, that not to explore them with ourselves, in other words, to be self-sexual. And for most of us, we learn definitely not to explore them with others when we're 11 or 12 years old, when they come alive. So you see, we develop tremendous ambivalence around our sexual nature, and it becomes a belief system or point of view that we hold in a very structured way. And so we might hear then about free sex, and we think, oh boy, that sounds good, I'm going to try that. So we're trying free sex, and you know, but that doesn't really resolve the ambivalence either. We still have all the ambivalence. It's just now that we've added free sex into the whole thing, freely exploring our sexual nature. So you see, it never goes anywhere. It's always circling around in the same ambivalent belief system or point of view. Now, this is a real problem. When the sexual movement that we feel in the body, it isn't always interpreted in the same way by all people. The wisdom traditions all show that this is part of the practice in some traditions, and that is to simply let go of all these belief systems, and if you feel moved to have a sexual relationship, go ahead and do so, but rest as awareness while doing so. Come to know these wonderful expressions of human living as they are. They are expressions of awareness. They're not something to be ambivalent about. And, you know, a lot of us, when we're having a sexual relationship, we think it has to be a certain way. You know, there has to be an orgasm, for example, and it's preferable if both people have an orgasm at the same time, or several people at the same time, or whatever it is for you. You know, so we learn all these things, and we learn to be troubled by any sexual fantasies we may have. We have our sexual fantasies, but they have to be of a certain kind, or we feel like we've kind of gone outside the boundaries. So you see, with all the appearances of awareness are primordially pure. If we just rest as awareness while exploring our sexual nature, then we come up with a direct first-hand experience of the reality that it is awareness and nothing else, that there really is no division. Whether we're having sex with ourselves or someone else, we come to really see that there is no division, that all of these thoughts, all of these emotions, all of these sensations of the body, they're not anything to be ambivalent about. Just like everything else, it's awareness. It's an expression of wisdom awareness. The more we release our hold on these strict belief systems, the more complete we feel about ourselves and others, the more understanding we feel about ourselves and others. This tremendous movement that comes up for young people of what is usually described as sexual energy is just the energy of initiation into adulthood, that tremendous energy of the body to be of great benefit to oneself and others. That happens at that time of life because it's the time of life when young people separate out from the confines of the family. And part of that separating out is this tremendous energy to know oneself and to be of benefit to oneself and to be of benefit to others. But if it's taken and made into a belief system and described in all these ways that are so sad, really, then it just becomes another belief system by which we feel limited, confused, and we live our whole life never really knowing what to do about it.
Can you clarify if that sexual urge comes up toward another where, like, say an adult wants to be sexual with a child, and how to proceed with that? Can you just clarify that piece?
Well, sure. You know, if an adult wants to be sexual with a child, then they need to rest as awareness and not do that. You know, engage the fearless conduct of the absolute rest of awareness, which guarantees that we know when we're resting as awareness because our actions are of benefit to ourselves and to others. Well, what do we need to say about that? You know, it's only when we get totally confused about who we are and completely ambivalent about our sexual nature and unsure of what's right and what's wrong and that things like this happen. One of the great things about resting as awareness is that rather than having all these codes and belief systems that are telling us what's right and what's wrong, all these codes and belief systems that really aren't working very well for pretty much everyone, we come to that within ourselves, and this is purely so within every human being. We come to that wisdom that is unerring. It doesn't need any codes of operation. It just knows. It knows in a definitive way how to proceed. And however it proceeds is a benefit, a self-benefit and benefit to others. Yes, Keith.
Is it sometimes helpful to let go or even impose some structure or discipline? Would be not the right word, maybe, but a structure. If you've had a habit, let's say, one had a habit of going towards sexual lovemaking with people because that's where your energy went. But that became sort of your habit around where you found bliss, let's call it that. Is it helpful? It's just an idea.
Uh-huh.
You get that question?
Uh-huh. Well, all I can say is rest is awareness, and you'll know.
Okay.
You'll know what's right for you. I'm not going to sit here and prescribe one thing for everyone, or I'll have to write a book, you know. So I did say something definitive about adults having sex with children, but I'm not. There isn't. When you rest as awareness, you know what's needed for yourself, you know. And it doesn't have to be one thing forever, like I'm going to be celibate forever, or I'm going to do this forever, or that forever. It just is whatever it is right now. And exploring the sexual nature, celibacy may be an adventure for a while. And then if there's a move from that, that'll come about naturally too. Yeah. There aren't any rule books in awareness. When we start to put together the rule books, well then, it has to be one way for everyone. Now, You know, most of us have heard about different things, events in human history that have involved enslaving people, like enslaving Africans or enslaving Jews, gypsies, and gay people during the Second World War. And some of these have been very violent. You know, many people have died, like during the Holocaust. And then there are certainly genocidal movements that are very alive today as we speak around the world, where many, many people are being slaughtered. And so these forms of slavery are something that we usually have very strong feelings about. And it's likely that everyone in this room feels that they're very wrong, that it's really wrong to enslave others. We can't bear to think about being a slave ourselves or being in any of these situations where people have been enslaved. Now, when we only rely on our belief systems, we enslave ourselves. So the internalized oppression is so great that we enslave ourselves. We enslave our natural vitality and capacity to live life being of tremendous benefit by enslaving ourselves to our belief systems. And for most of us, we don't even see these belief systems as something we've freely chosen. These are just something someone else has told us about and that we took them on, we adopted them. So when we rest as awareness, we free ourselves from that bondage to these belief systems, no matter what they may be. No belief system whatsoever is worth keeping in place when it comes to realizing our own wisdom and well-being that's so natural to us. So other people can enslave us, but the most profound kind of slavery is the one within ourselves, where we just live in a pell-mell fashion, believing everything that's been imprinted on us. Free the slaves. Thank you.